Brian Lehrer on WNYC. A U.S. ambassador is dead, and the Mideast is rising as an issue in the presidential race. The biggest blemish on the Democratic convention was the omission, then forced inclusion, of a platform statement endorsing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Yesterday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu accused the Obama administration of failing to draw a red line for Iran's nuclear program while giving Israel a red light on its desire to stop Iran militarily. And now, violence in response to an American-made anti-Muslim film has killed the U.S. ambassador to Libya, Christopher Stevens, and also shaken the embassy in Egypt. Here is Secretary of State Hillary Clinton speaking moments ago.
We are working to determine the precise motivations and methods of those who carried out this assault. Some have sought to justify this vicious behavior along with the protest that took place at our embassy in Cairo yesterday as a response to inflammatory material posted on the internet. America's commitment to religious tolerance goes back to the very beginning of our nation. But let me be clear, there is no justification for this. None.
Now, one of the reasons that Secretary Clinton was so determined to establish that they believe there is no justification for this is that the Romney campaign is criticizing President Obama's handling of the incidents. The initial statement from the U.S. Embassy in Cairo before the violence got so bad that it took the life of the U.S. ambassador in Libya, the initial statement from the U.S. Embassy in Cairo denounced the film. So here is Mitt Romney moments ago talking about that.
We encourage other nations to understand and respect the principles of our Constitution, because we recognize that these principles are the ultimate source of freedom for individuals around the world. I also believe the administration was wrong to stand by a statement sympathizing with those who had breached our embassy in Egypt instead of condemning their actions. It's never too early for the United States government to condemn attacks on Americans and to defend our values. The White House distanced itself last night from the statement, saying it wasn't cleared by Washington. And that reflects the mixed signals they're sending to the world.
Mitt Romney, moments ago, President Obama is expected to speak momentarily. We will bring you that live. Joining me now to talk about all of this is Gideon Rose, the editor of Foreign Affairs Magazine and the author of the book How Wars End. Gideon, welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Good to be here.
Can you first talk about the statement that was released by the U.S. Embassy in Cairo, why Secretary Clinton had to walk that back, and what Romney was referring to when he talked about these mixed messages?
Look, the fact is that there's no good answer for how to deal easily with these kinds of incidents. What happened here was that a mob reacted in a grotesque and violent and ridiculous way to their crazy grievances. There was a video posted online on YouTube which mocked the Prophet Muhammad in a variety of ways. And in trying to take that out on the United States, the mob attacked the American consulate and ended up killing the U.S. ambassador and several members of his staff. It's a horrific incident, and there were also mobs that stormed the U.S. Embassy compound in Cairo. The local diplomats in these kind of situations want to make the problems go away, and the initial statement that was released erred, I think, on the side of being a little too sympathetic, or rather a little too hard on the too soft on the motivations of the protesters, shall we say. In other words, that the problem wasn't that the ultimate problem here is not that a video was posted, it was that the mobs reacted as they did. But the fact is that these kinds of inflammatory things, which everyone has the right to post and the right to do, nevertheless can cause problems, which is why one of the pastors in Florida who has been involved in this one in promoting the video was somebody who the U.S. officials and even U.S. military officials tried to talk down from doing similar things and Quran burnings and so forth because of the fear of retribution effects in Afghanistan a couple of years ago or last year. So the fact is that the embassy statement was too soft and should have condemned even more vociferously and more directly the mobs and the killings, although there's no reason to believe this was anything like a Libyan government sanctioned operation. This was a local mob that basically was out of control and reflects the lawlessness and anti-American feeling on the ground rather than any sort of government policy on Libya.
In fact, just the opposite of this being a Libyan government action. I want to play you a clip of Libya's deputy ambassador to the UK, Ahmed Jibril, on the BBC earlier this morning, where he acknowledged very explicitly that Libyan government security is insufficient to control the jihadis who are looking to cause trouble there. Listen.
This is, I think, the tip of the iceberg of the serious challenges the Libyan government is facing in the country. And I think the time has come for the Libyan authority to decide at this stage to encounter this group and also to call for international support or assistance if they need so. Otherwise, I think this intervention from the international community will be necessary in the future.
The Libyan ambassador, deputy ambassador to London, Ahmed Jibril. And Gideon Rose, I found that a remarkable statement. Here was a representative of the Libyan government practically inviting international military intervention to keep the security solid in his own country.
Look, the fact is that after Gaddafi was toppled, Gaddafi had presided over a dictatorship that didn't allow any actual state building in Libya. When Gaddafi left, and one of the reasons people like me were a little bit nervous about what would happen on the ground there, was because there was nothing like the semblance of an actual state in Libya. And so I thought there was going to be a lot of chaos and a lot of disorder and a lot of lawlessness and corruption. And that made me a little worried about what would happen. I thought there might actually have to be more Americans on the ground and outsiders maintaining order. The fact is, Libya has actually, I was a little bit wrong. Libya has done better in the last year than many of us thought it would. It's still rampant lawlessness and corruption prevails. There's still a lot of problems, and the state institutions are still weak. There isn't a massive monopoly on violence by the government, and so things like this can and do happen. But the fact is that there, overall, the progress of Libya over the last year has been relatively decent and better than what one could have expected, frankly. So they're still in the early stages of making a new history for themselves. But the government doesn't have control over the country. And I think that, you know, their attitude in this case is frankly, so far, the correct one.
And the U.S. has announced the deployment of some 50 Marines to Libya to reinforce security at U.S. diplomatic facilities in the aftermath of that attack on the consulate in Benghazi that killed the U.S. ambassador. It's funny that it happens now. They went through that whole intervention without any deployment of ground troops when they were getting Gaddafi out. Do you think this is the tip of the iceberg of a U.S. military intervention of some kind?
No, I think that in the longer run, what they'll do is they'll reduce the U.S. presence or guard it more heavily rather than double down by having a large presence with a large security situation. So I think that this is a temporary measure rather than a permanent commitment. The Obama administration has no desire to be involved deeply on the ground in Libya maintaining order there. So I think that they will try to avoid that at whatever cost possible.
Again, President Obama is expected to speak shortly. We will take a very quick break right here and continue with Gideon Rose as the situation develops both in Libya and in Egypt. If you want to get in on this, we don't know exactly how long the president is going to be. His appearance was scheduled for 5 minutes ago. So if you want to call in and react to this news today, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we continue to follow developments after violence at the U.S. Embassy in Cairo and the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya. At the that consulate, the U.S. ambassador, Christopher Stevens, was killed. It's the first time that a U.S. ambassador has been killed in the line of duty in many years. We're talking about this situation. And here comes President Obama to make a live statement. Here he is.
And civilians work tirelessly to advance the interests and values of our nation. Often they are away from their families. Sometimes they brave great danger. Yesterday, four of these extraordinary Americans were killed in an attack on our diplomatic post in Benghazi. Among those killed was our ambassador, Chris Stevens, as well as Foreign Service Officer Sean Smith. We are still notifying the families of the others who were killed. And today, the American people stand united in holding the families of the four Americans in our thoughts and in our prayers. The United States condemns in the strongest terms this outrageous and shocking attack. We're working with the government of Libya to secure our diplomats. I've also directed my administration to increase our security at diplomatic posts around the world. And make no mistake, we will work with the Libyan government to bring to justice the killers who attacked our people. Since our founding, the United States has been a nation that respects all faiths. We reject all efforts to denigrate the religious beliefs of others. But there is absolutely no justification to this type of senseless violence. None. The world must stand together to unequivocally reject these brutal acts. Already, many Libyans have joined us in doing so, and this attack will not break the bonds between the United States and Libya. Libyan security personnel fought back against the attackers alongside Americans. Libyans helped some of our diplomats find safety, and they carried Ambassador Stevens's body to the hospital, where we tragically learned that he had died. It's especially tragic that Chris Stevens died in Benghazi because it is a city that he helped to save. At the height of the Libyan revolution, Chris led our diplomatic post in Benghazi. With characteristic skill, courage, and resolve, he built partnerships with Libyan revolutionaries and helped them as they planned to build a new Libya. When the Gaddafi regime came to an end, Chris was there to serve as our ambassador to the new Libya, and he worked tirelessly to support this young democracy, and I think both Secretary Clinton and I relied deeply on his knowledge of the situation on the ground there. He was a role model to all who worked with him and to the young diplomats who aspire to walk in his footsteps. Along with his colleagues, Chris died in a country that is still striving to emerge from the recent experience of war. Today, the loss of these four Americans is fresh, but our memories of them linger on. I have no doubt that their legacy will live on through the work that they did far from our shores and in the hearts of those who love them back home. Of course, yesterday was already a painful day for our nation as we marked the solemn memory of the 9/11 attacks. We mourned with the families who were lost on that day. I visited the graves of troops who made the ultimate sacrifice in Iraq and Afghanistan at the hallowed grounds of Arlington Cemetery, and had the opportunity to say thank you and visit some of our wounded warriors at Walter Reed. And then last night, we learned the news of this attack in Benghazi. As Americans, let us never, ever forget that our freedom is only sustained because there are people who are willing to fight for it, to stand up for it, and in some cases, lay down their lives for it. Our country is only as strong as the character of our people and the service of those, both civilian and military, who represent us around the globe. No acts of terror will ever shake the resolve of this great nation, alter that character, or eclipse the light of the values that we stand for. Today we mourn for more Americans who represent the very best of the United States of America. We will not waver in our commitment to see that justice is done for this terrible act. And make no mistake, justice will be done. But we also know that the lives these Americans led stand in stark contrast to those of their attackers. These four Americans stood up for freedom and human dignity. They should give every American great pride in the country that they served and the hope that our flag represents to people around the globe who also yearn to live in freedom and with dignity. We grieve with their families, but let us carry on their memory and let us continue their work of seeking a stronger America and a better world for all of our children. Thank you. May God bless the memory of those we lost, and may God bless the United States of America.
President Obama speaking live in response to the violence at the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya, that took the life of the U.S. ambassador there, Christopher Stevens, and at the U.S. embassy in Cairo in response to a film, an obscure film until now, by an Israeli-American that depicted Islam as a cancer. Mitt Romney also spoke about the situation about an hour ago. Here's a short excerpt from what he said.
American leadership is necessary to ensure that events in the region don't spin out of control. We cannot hesitate to use our influence in the region to support those who share our values and our interests. Over the last several years, we've stood witness to an Arab Spring that presents an opportunity for a more peaceful and prosperous region, but it also poses the potential for peril if the forces of extremism and violence are allowed to control the course of events. We must strive to ensure that the Arab Spring does not become an Arab winter.
Mitt Romney, and we heard President Obama live, and still with us is Gideon Rose, editor of Foreign Affairs magazine. Gideon, nothing surprising from the president there, not much of a policy statement, just really a statement of condolence to the family of Chris Stevens and a statement of outrage that that anybody would engage in this type of violence.
Yeah, because there's not much of a policy issue here in the sense that this was a mob violent, an act of sort of mob violence by non-state actors against the wishes of their government in a country that doesn't have particularly strong institutions. So it's deeply regrettable and awful that it happened, but it's not like it should be the occasion for a major change in policy or there's anything that actually can be done dramatically differently.
But he did also refer to our tradition of free speech in this country. And again, I think that was a response to the initial statement that came out from the U.S. Embassy in Cairo that condemned the film for needlessly insulting Muslims. And Mitt Romney, as we discussed earlier, had reacted to that by saying the Obama administration was denouncing the wrong side here. Not that he would embrace the language in that film, but instead of embracing free speech, he was seeming to be soft on the protesters who got violent in denouncing the film rather than embrace free speech. So the president, as Hillary Clinton did earlier this morning, made sure to reference the value of free speech in the United States, correct?
Yeah. Given the debased state of our politics, it's not surprising that the presidential candidates immediately jumped in to try and turn this into a domestic political football. There's actually precedent for that as well. 104 years ago, 108 years ago, there was another incident in North Africa when a once American citizen, although then later on not, named Ian Perdicaris, a Greek merchant, was accosted and taken by some bandits in Tangier. And held hostage by a local bandit. And this came into the Republican presidential race, or the presidential race that year, when John Hay, the Secretary of State, and Theodore Roosevelt, the president, tried to figure out what to do. And they decided to put pressure on the Sultan of Morocco to give in to the demands of the kidnapper and have the guy released. And the bandit was named Raisuli. And Roosevelt, actually Hay, released a statement to the Republican convention that year saying essentially what this government wants is Perdicaris alive or Raisuli dead. And the incident got solved. The Moroccan government gave in and we got Perdicaris out. But that actually made the people at the Republican convention in 1904 go wild with glee. A Kansas delegate exclaimed, "Roosevelt and Hay know what they're doing. Our people, like courage, will stand for anything those men do." And so, you know, the idea that sort of you can make hay out of a foreign crisis, even in North Africa, and get Republicans to go with a hawkish line has some precedent behind it.
That's an interesting piece of history. Now, I think another important thing to bring up here is that Libya's interim president has apologized to the U.S. for the attack, even though, again, this was by a group that's opposed to the Libyan government. This wasn't by the U.S., by the Libyan government. But Libya's interim president has apologized to the U.S. for the fact that this happened. On the other hand, Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi has not. And in fact, he is urging the United States government to prosecute the, quote, madmen behind the video. There was also violence at the U.S. Embassy in Cairo in response to this film. What do you make of Morsi?
Well, this is a great question, right? One of the problems and issues in dealing with the Middle East right now is the old order, the U.S.-sponsored order in the Middle East, was basically consisted of Arab authoritarian leaders who delivered to the U.S. the major things that the United States wanted, but didn't help their own people in the process. And the Arab Spring essentially was a series of domestic popular uprisings against that order and against those leaders. And it's posed the United States and the United States foreign policy with a real dilemma. Because on the one hand, our hearts go out and our wishes go out on support of the people of the region. We want them to have democracy like we have democracy. We think there's a whole variety of reasons why their lives should be better. But at the same time, the authoritarian leaders were delivering the goods to us. And so there's a risk and a worry that popularly elected leaders, especially if they have more Islamist tendencies, may not be as good for American interests. And so this question of what do you do with a locally elected popular leader in a developing country who is not necessarily able to be pushed around as easily as a formerly American client. I think that the answer is that we want democracy and we should be careful to put the red lines of what we expect from these countries as far back as possible. Of course, we have interests that we need to protect, but we want to give a leader like Morsi as much space as possible.
Does this necessarily indicate that Morsi, who comes from the Muslim Brotherhood, of course, is giving kind of a wink to Islamist violence in reaction to a film that insults Muhammad? Or could it mean that he espouses a more European zero tolerance policy toward hate speech?
I would say it's probably the former rather than the latter. And I think that the Morsi has a domestic constituency that is quite radical in some certain respects. And he has to say things and he has to tolerate things and not say things that that we would, you know, in a way different from what we would want from him. And the question is, at what point do we actually say this is unacceptable? At what point do we say, look, you have domestic issues that you're dealing with and we understand that, and so we're going to let this slide a little bit? And that's a really tough judgment call.
I want to play one more clip of the deputy Libyan ambassador to London, Ahmed Jibril, on the BBC earlier, talking about who their government really sees as responsible for this violence, not necessarily just a grassroots outpouring in reaction to the film, but something more organized and maybe sinister. Listen.
From what we have heard, some people demonstrated yesterday in front of the consulate, and then they were joined by an Islamic notorious group called Ansar al-Sharia, and they took advantage of what was happening and they attacked the embassy. This group has carried out several terrorist attacks within the last few weeks, and also the killing of some Libyan officials, especially in Benghazi, for the last 3 or 4 weeks.
So, Gideon, he's saying that Ansar Sharia, a jihadi group that was not known before the Libyan revolution, infiltrating these protests and using it to bring in some heavy weapons, as the ambassador described them, that that they have, and really being the ones responsible for this attack. That's pretty interesting.
It is interesting, and to the extent that is correct, and I'm sure we'll find out, and certainly the U.S. government is investigating that very, very carefully right now, if that proves to be the case, and to the extent that there were sort of local terrorist organizations or transnational groups involved in the attack, then obviously they can and should be clamped down hard on. And the one thing that this administration has actually shown it is prepared to do, even as it supports the Arab Spring by and large, is to come down very, very hard on various kinds of jihadi groups who attack American interests. So to the extent that we can identify groups and people responsible for this attack, they will be dealt with extremely severely, I am absolutely sure of it.
30 seconds left. What happens next?
What happens next partly depends on whether there are a lot further provocations. The question of the sort of Muhammad images and the perceived slighting of Islamic religion is one that is going to continue to be a problem in years to come because of the crazy sensitivities of the locals in the Middle East and the traditions of free speech and liberalism in the West, which allow anybody to say anything as it should be. And so the combination of those two things has generated a series of incidents in the past, will continue to generate a series of incidents, and unfortunately the question for sane people on all sides is how to ride these things out and make sure they don't disrupt the broader political relations of the countries involved.
Gideon Rose, editor of Foreign Affairs, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And author of the book, How Wars End. It was an Israeli-American, by the way, who made this film, and we will speak next to a member of the Israeli parliament. Stay with us.